on this episode of Edge of the Web.
YouTube does not need your metadata. So optimize it 100% for people, the story, the content, the titles, the thumbnails, and just focus on serving people really well. YouTube says that anything that the creator has to do that the user doesn't care about is classified as a bug.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web. Winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Here at Seymour and edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
All right. Hey, welcome to episode 367 of Edge of the Web. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. If you haven't come across us before, thanks for joining us. We certainly appreciate you listening in and watching on our YouTube channels. Every week, we bring you amazing guests from around the planet talking about digital marketing news, as well as digital marketing tactics that will increase your bottom line. So we unpack a marketing topic. And if you're, doesn't depend on where you're coming from. If you're a freelancer, if you're part of a marketing organization or agency, or if you're part of the marketing department in your company, this show is for you. So check it out over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Just to tell you what we do on a regular basis, we roll through this show, both video and audio, take the audio over to all the different podcast aggregators like iTunes, Player FM, Google Play, and the like. So for the audio files, we are meeting you almost everywhere on the podcast space. And on the video side of things, we're taking it to YouTube, Facebook on a regular basis. We're breaking the show up into our news section. So we cover about three news stories each and every show. And then our full-length interview is also there for consumption. And every once in a while, we'll dice it up and be able to give you some aha moments or insight moments in video as well. We'll take everything, pull it all together, and transcribe everything for our blog content, social content. So wherever you are in the omni-channel new media space, we're delivering some content for you. Certainly appreciate it if you jump into our newsletter, sign up there. We're not using the email for anything except keeping you aware of who we're going to be talking to next. So jump in there over to edgeofthewebradio.com. You can sign up right there. The entire show, well, I should say the title sponsor of the show is Site Strategics, our parent company. And we're a digital marketing technical firm here in Indianapolis, Indiana. We're focused on agile digital marketing. Our top skills are technical SEO, content SEO, conversion rate optimization, social media management, and social media marketing and the like, plus a bunch of other tricks too. So if you're interested in maybe what we can do for you in the digital marketing space, we'd be happy to have a phone call with you, an hour consultation to give you a little bit of understanding of what we can do for your digital marketing success. So you can jump over there and give us a call, 877-SEO for web, that's SEO for web, or 877-736-4932. All right, we're going to be jumping into this real quick. Jacob, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. Eager to start the weekend.
This is a well-deserved weekend, I think, this time around.
My gosh. Yeah, this was a barnstormer week for us at the company. And got any plans this weekend?
I think we're going to go swimming with the kids.
Cool.
Neighbor's got a pool. Get them in there. Wear them out. Make them fall asleep at night.
There's the plan right there.
That's what I want. Maybe get them to sleep in. My daughter promised me the other day, she's like, if you let us stay up till midnight playing Mario Kart, we will sleep in the next day. And I said, I'll tell you what, you sleep in on Saturday, I'll let you stay up Saturday night till midnight.
Oh, wow.
I'll do it, because I know they won't make it.
No.
They will not sleep in.
I got a negotiating scenario from my 8-year-old. He wanted to watch a movie, but I talked to him earlier and said, hey, you want to read some of The Hobbit? Because we do a Hobbit read each and every, I try to do it every night. And he forewent the Hobbit for the movie. Then he swings back around 9:30 and says, Dad, we won't say yes, but could we read some Hobbit now? It's like, dude, I know what you're doing.
I just want to stay up later.
We'll stay up later. So,
Yeah. I knew
shut that down right now.
No, I guarantee you if I let them stay up till midnight, even though that would make them exhausted and terrible, they would still be in my room at 7:30.
Absolutely.
Ooh, what can we do?
They're wandering aimlessly. You got to police them.
Same question every week. What can we do? No, you cannot open my door.
Yeah, for one, yeah, absolutely. All right, just to let you know who we're going to be talking to here in the near future, we've got Jaron Courthout of Salesforce coming on next week. Shay Rowbottom's going to be in the house the next week. Shem Hyder from Zen Media will be talking to us. Will Critchlow will be on the show as well. And on the week of the 14th of October, we're interviewing Dixon Jones, talking schema and inbound linking. That's going to be a good show as well. We're always trying to unpack schema more and more for our advanced SEO listeners. So if you're interested in being part of the show, or if you know somebody who should be interviewed on the show, just drop us a note over at info@edgeofthewebradio.com. That's info@edgeofthewebradio.com. Make sure you set your reminders for the show on YouTube whenever it actually drops, and it drops within a couple days of our recording. That's around Tuesday or Wednesday each week. All right. So you want to make sure that you check out the bonus episode as well, the news podcast that we did, the broadcast with Tim Schmoyer. Fantastic insights on a number of different headliners, and especially the TikTok buyout, Walmart and Microsoft going after possibly a bid on TikTok. So check out that news section as well. But for now, let's wrap up all the housekeeping of the show and introduce you to this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Tim Schmoyer, CEO of VideoCreators.com.
All right, so in 2006, Tim was actually in graduate school and wanted to introduce his girlfriend to his family across the country. So he uploaded videos to YouTube of them hanging out together. So oddly enough, others started watching and it kind of freaked him out a little bit. So he actually started digging into YouTube and to try to figure out how it all worked. So fast forward in 2011, he became the first creator to start training YouTube creators. And today his company, Video Creators, has been featured on Fox, Forbes, BBC, even YouTube themselves. So his team has actually helped their clients organically earn over 17 billion views and 70 million subscribers. But that's not the beginning, as they actually continue to train creators to master YouTube and change their lives. So 70 billion views, 70 million subscribers. What a fantastic litmus test here. So Tim, you're a sought after commodity right now, aren't you?
It depends on who you're talking about. Some people are and some people aren't. we've been doing YouTube stuff for over about 15 years now, and doing it full time for 7. And we've worked with brands doing their YouTube strategy for Disney, for HBO, for Warner Brothers, eBay, Budweiser. Talking with some other brands right now I can't mention yet, but one day will be pretty cool stories. So
awesome.
Yeah, we love doing this strategy. It's been a lot of fun. Had a lot of success doing it.
It's a niche, but my God, what a large niche, the video creation side of things. And certainly there's been such a change here over this year in video consumption. But briefly, before anything else, I want to let our audience know, you're a regular speaker at different events, more virtual, obviously, than anything else right now. But YouTube HQ in New York, VidCon, Content Marketing World, Vid Summit, Vid Labs Live, Video Marketing World, Vlogger Fair, New Media Expo. Where else are you speaking, or have you spoken here recently?
Man, there's People of Video Conference, there's Video Marketing World, there's YouTube Marketing Summit, there's a Hero Brand Summit, there's one out where Walmart is headquartered out in Bentonville, Arkansas, called Megaphone. I don't know. I lost track. I stopped trying to count.
So for our listeners, you're catching a theme here, right? So for the podcast listeners, let's just have you jump over to the video side of things, because this is what Tim does on a regular basis. It's incredible to interview a practitioner. A lot of times we interview marketers that are a little bit further from the wheel, so to speak, on some of the executions that they're doing. They're either steering an agency or what have you. You're in the throes of everything plus running an agency. You're also guiding companies to this platform that is somewhat foreign to a lot of businesses, right?
Yeah, usually what it looks like for us is we will take someone who's trying to grow on YouTube and they're working really hard, and sometimes they have entire production suites, agencies behind them, and they're just trying really hard to get momentum on YouTube. And like one brand, They had seven full-time people on their YouTube channel, all of them with television, Hollywood production backgrounds, shooting in 8K,
like holy,
way overkill. Red Epic camera, you know, on a production studio, it was a vegan channel, had a paid actress who was like in this commercial kitchen and everything. They put hundreds of thousands of dollars in this channel, and they come after a year and they're like, Tim, how come we have the best videographers, the best editors, the best production. We have a professional actress and a commercial. We've put hundreds of thousands of dollars in this thing. Why is it after publishing one video very consistently for a year, mm-hmm. after 52 videos, our top video only has 24 views?
Oh.
But there's this person in his basement with a webcam getting millions. Like, what the heck, right? So that's typically when these, whether it's a brand, whether it's a small business or just a hobby creator reaches out and they're like, what's going on? Why is this not working? And that's when we partner with them to take the value of what we're doing and then develop a strategy for them to like, okay, here's how you're going to move this forward and actually reach more people and grow this channel.
So what you're telling me is that predominantly those companies are already trying it out, already trying to commit to video content, right?
Yeah, and a lot of them are doing it in old media style. Like, they're very familiar with television.
Right.
They're very familiar with production stuff, and they think that, oh, I'm good at video stuff. Let mm-hmm. me put that on YouTube, and people should watch it. And then they find out with us usually that it's not working. You can't just take something that you slap on the television. That's a very different viewing experience. People have different expectations for the content. Mm-hmm. They are looking for different things and they're trying to solve different problems with it. And there's a lot of unspoken expectations up for the content as well when it's online versus on a screen and it's a like a movie theater or a television or something. So that's where we come along and help them figure out that world.
How much pushback do you get? Because what you're talking about, those creative directors that have seen such success and know their proven model, right? You don't call their baby ugly because it's not, they have great skills, but talking to them about their marketing direction and in introducing them into a whole nother consumer space of video consumption and engagement that they've never been used to, I'm sure it's challenging to these individuals to fully buy in or fully commit to some of the methodology that you provide.
It depends on how teachable and humble they are, to be honest.
There,
like,
you go.
When I was out at NAB speaking out at New Media Expo in NAB, those guys, like, nothing against NAB or anything, but like a lot of the sessions that I went to, it just sounded to me like a bunch of angry old men in suits complaining. We're just wishing the good old days were still here, complaining about digital media and things and saying how, and just like bashing it. It's not legit. I'm like, it is legit. You're just angry that people aren't watching yours exactly. anymore.
Right.
So if they come in with that attitude, like, no, it's just like, it's not going to work. You're not going to make the pivot. But there are a lot of brands who are like, no, we know this isn't working anymore. Can you please help us and show us how to do this? And so whether it's working with a television network mm-hmm. or it's working with a small brand or just a hobby creator who's trying to get some traction because they need to figure out how to make money at home now.
Right.
Whatever the situation, if they come with that type of attitude, we can absolutely help them and they will succeed.
Excellent. Now, every bit of support that you give is pretty much customized to their model, and you put together a profile, an entire strategy just for them. But there are some similarities and commonalities of mistakes or misinvested type of efforts. Can you give us kind of some easy to swing at concepts of things that a company that's trying to invest in video and has been doing it, what they should be avoiding?
Oh, yeah. Lots of things. So we'll start at the very top, I guess, with the most basic. And a lot of these things, when I say them, everyone's going to nod their head and be like, oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never make that mistake. Well, for some reason, when people, marketers come to YouTube and online video in general, I don't know what happens, but I think they throw the things they know it just goes out the window for some reason when it comes to YouTube. So for example, one of those things being, it's very important when you're first starting trying to grow a YouTube channel is you know who your audience is. Who are you trying to go after?
Right.
And normally what marketers are doing is they're looking at the who's already here data. But we're like, that can be helpful, but are you attracting the people you want already? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is no, then like, okay, now that data is not helpful. Instead, we need to make a strategy that's going to attract the audience you actually do want. And so, by audience, I don't mean general demographic information about like age and gender and median income and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, like, who is this person? What is their story? What problem are they trying to solve? How clearly can they figure out that you're going to solve that problem for them?
Right.
Whether the problem be like education, like I'm trying to learn or fix or solve something, mm-hmm. or just be like, the problem is right now I got time I want to kill and I just want some entertainment. So it's really deeply understanding the audience's story, because the better you understand the audience you're trying to attract on YouTube, the more likely they are to deeply resonate with your content when they discover you. And then when that happens, YouTube can start building this isn't technical language, I'm trying to explain it. They start figuring out exactly who this content is for. Mm-hmm. And the power of YouTube over Google and other discovery mechanisms online is that when YouTube figures out who your content is for, they will just start putting it in front of the right person for you at the right time, whether that be like put it on someone's homepage or right. putting in a suggested section next to the video. And so that's the power of like really exponential growth, is when YouTube figures out this is who this video is for, this is who's resonating it with it. Like, look, here's this other person over here who fits that same profile. They haven't found this video yet. Let's put it in front of them. And that's when you go for like clients that we work with go from doing about 2,000 subscribers a day to 39,000 subscribers per day.
Wow.
Is when they lock in on like definitely who's the audience is. And then YouTube just starts putting it in front of the right people for you. They're not even searching for it. So that's like really diving in the audience is definitely like something that I know a lot of marketers know, mm-hmm. but they kind of just keep it really generic or at the demographic info level and don't really dive into this person's story and the emotions and the human connection pieces and things like that.
Got it. So, I mean, you know it when you finally see traction, but you also have to experiment with this, because you never hit the nail on the head immediately, and you have to have that marketing experiment mindset to be able to see what plan what you're measuring, right?
Right.
And be able to see the metrics. And you just can't change, you just can't pivot without knowing that you're probably going to have to pivot a couple other times to really get it right, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's just like becoming a musician, becoming an athlete, becoming an actor or an actress. Like these are skills that you develop over time.
Right.
It's not like, oh, yeah, someone told me how to play the piano and now I'm a concert pianist, right? It's just like, you practice, repetition over time is definitely how you dial in that content to get to that
point. Until we're in the matrix where you can just actually wet wire and plug in and know kung fu just like that, right?
Yeah. So target audience would be definitely one of them. Very closely paired with that, second thing would be the value. Like how quickly can someone pick up on the value that you're trying to deliver to them?
Okay.
On social media, people are just constantly swiping. And if they've never heard of you before, they have no prior relationship with you before, the only reason they clicked on your video is because the title and thumbnail pitched some sort of value that they want to consume. So they click on it. And you've got to capture that attention very quickly, which is probably a whole nother conversation. But but what I'm talking about a little higher level than that, which is how quickly does your brand make sense to me?
Got it.
I've never heard of Edge of the Web before. You did a great job when we opened up at telling people this is who we are. This is exactly what we're about. And this is what you can expect. And here's what we hope to do for you. Like there's no questions in the mind of the viewer. On YouTube, you don't get about a minute to do that. You got to do that about 5 seconds or three, ideally. Anything more than three, you'll start seeing some audience abandonment. Mm-hmm. So however you do, there's a lot of different ways you can do that, but being able to articulate that quickly mm-hmm. and communicate that, whether it's verbally or visually or a combination of both, that takes a lot of work to really dial that in to the point where when your target audience hears it, they're like, oh my gosh, where have you been my whole life? This is exactly what I need. Mm-hmm. And they will definitely be more likely to resonate with your content. It will give you longer viewing sessions, more longer watch time, which helps your channel. And then you'll get a more engaged viewer, subscriber, return viewer. But it really starts with getting that person's attention with like, oh, I understand exactly what this is all about. So a very clear brand is very important.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if you're also dealing with a hooking into the subconscious as well, because literally because of that small window of attraction, right? And I'm going to take us there as well. The video hook, that conscious and subconscious visual element, they may actually start playing it without them even realizing why they were playing it. If you can hook them with something that is going to align, not just with the brand, but also just the playable feature of the video, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that. One way would be to like have a little branded intro. Mm-hmm. Most people make their branded intros like way too long.
Yeah, yeah.
Maximum of 5 seconds, but 3 seconds is ideal. Wow. And where it's just 3 seconds, it shows like for mine, it's Video Creators TV, my channel. It'll show my what? Master YouTube. That's what I'm going to teach you to do. Spread your message. That's my why, like reach more people, change their lives. And then brand, Video Creators TV. All that happens in like actually 2.5 seconds.
Unbelievable.
And then it's gone. And that's all you really, it doesn't have to be like a dissertation about here's who we are, what we're all about.
Sure.
It's just enough to capture their attention, be like, oh, this makes sense. I never heard of Video Creators before, but I get it now. They're going to teach me to master YouTube and this changing line phase. I don't really know what that's about. Most people don't believe that with me, by the way. Most people are like, master YouTube, make more money. Master YouTube, feel more popular or something. And I think those things are great. But I think that ultimately what I get really excited about is when we use money and tools, money and popularity as tools to reach people and change their lives. So it's something I communicate right up front. And because of that, the clients that we tend to attract are the people who tend to have more of a mission behind what they're doing.
Oh.
And maybe not on the brand level, but the people who work at the brand who hear that, they're the ones who resonate with that message. And so they're like, wow, we want to work with you, because they get inspired. They get in like there's a shared belief component there that they really get excited about that attracts them to us. So,
you're kind of providing your audience. Forgive me. You're providing a gateway to be able to reach that entire, not just a consumer base, but it's not even their audience. It's their tribe. You're trying to connect them to their tribe, and they don't know how to actually find it. So I use this every once in a while, but you're kind of the Sherpa, right? And you're actually able to, you're guiding them, and you're figuring out along the way which tribe they should actually go to. But
yeah,
I mean, ultimately, whenever they hit that and they see the engagement and they see the loyalty that comes from that, then it's got to be gratifying in so many ways, not just from a consumer level, not just from a transactional level. A brand has a mission, a brand has values, a brand has people working behind it. And
right,
there's a belief, exactly. You know, there's a belief system of why they're working for that company. And if they can actually see that audience work with them, what a great experience that you can possibly offer them.
Oh man, I love it. I can tell you so many stories about brands that we start working with them. And this isn't to point the finger at us, but I just get really excited about it when brands are like, hey, we're doing this one thing. And then you're like, well, why does that matter? And they don't really know, but the audience needs to know in order to buy it, and in order to really start loving the brand rather than just liking the brand or something. And so we go through a process with them that, because your content has to revolve around that thing in order to really resonate and deep and create a deep emotional connection with people. So when we start going through that process, usually by the end, they're like, oh, I love my job way more than I thought I did. Like, you know, Disney parks no longer about roller coasters and it's now about like an opportunity to bring families together. Like, this is why I love my job now. So it's going to that deeper level. Like, it's not about interior design. It's about creating a space where people feel like they belong. It's not about like your debt consolidation software. It's about giving people hope and freedom, right? It's not about cosmetics and beauty stuff. It's about giving women confidence or whatever. You just keep going on.
It's not the drill. It's the hole that you want to create, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But so many people miss that. And they're just like, oh, this is what we do. We're like, okay, we got to get people to care about that a little bit more quickly, because they're not going to give you a minute and a half to listen to your spiel. So we got to like dig down. So that would be the second thing. I can go on this all day long. I don't know how deep you want to go, but there's titles, there's thumbnails, there's how you craft your content, there's how you wrap up their content, it's how you integrate sales into your content, all that stuff.
Well, I want to get there because those are absolute tactics. But as a sidebar, quick pause, you know what? You sound like Simon Sinek, start with why. I mean, that is foundationally what you're talking about. It's if you can actually connect the why of a company to the why of an audience, right? Via whatever the means or the medium that you can, boy, as soon as that happens, then you have such a strong loyalty factor and you've got audience that's going to champion you. And you keep on focusing on building loyalty in the audience as well. So you got to be authentic. You got to be real whenever you're moving that content, right?
Oh yeah. When we work with clients, one of the things that we say pretty often, because it's true, is like the strongest communities online and offline, doesn't matter if we're talking social media or just in your local, you know, whatever, they don't revolve around common interests like golf or, I don't know, video or whatever. They actually revolve around shared beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's like if you go to YouTube and search for like how to fix your lawnmower, you'll get great information, but 2 hours later, you won't remember who that person is, who that creator is, anything about them, because they just showed you how to do the lawnmower and that was it. Mm-hmm. Instead, if we want to build a strong community around our channel, there has to be a creed, a belief, because those beliefs, those shared beliefs is what are what people will link arms together for and stand up against the opposing belief. And that, and both of those sides end up strengthening because of the opposition. So if you want people to stand up with you, you have to stand for something yourself. And it's very easy just to think that, oh, my content should perform based on nothing more than the merit of how good this was produced. And maybe, but probably not. Like, those beliefs definitely need to be in there in order to attract a certain audience that you're going after.
We're really talking next level things here. Is that it's not the utility that you represent in your problem solving or whatever you're doing in video. It literally is understanding that it's a medium, but you have to be endorsed. You have to be championed. You have to be able to gain favor. And we have a very fickle audience, right? I mean, do you remember the Max Headroom show back in the 80s where they had blipverts? And literally, those advertising inserts that were less than a second, like milliseconds, and they would literally blow people's heads up. So there was a problem there. But we're dealing with that level of attraction, right? We're literally in such a small amount of space that you have to impact them visually, auditorily, and have a connection of belief and value so quickly. How do you go about doing that? What are some tips of attracting, getting that hook set to be able to get somebody to watch that video?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's going to take us a long time, but there's a lot of things, but I will suffice it to say, to recommend a book that's really good in this area. It's called Primal Branding by a guy named Patrick Hanlon, not sponsored, just so you know.
Sure.
No feedback. But what Patrick does in that book, Primal Branding, is he looks at all the top brands that develop cult-like audiences. And he asks the question, what did each of these brands do that made it easy for people to fall in love with what they're doing, to buy everything that they're selling, to become a fan of everything that they're doing, to watch all the content they're creating, become brand advocates for them? Like, what are these brands doing? And he boils it down to seven aspects of the primal code, he calls it. And we look at the channels on YouTube that are just killing it. Mm-hmm. They've got all seven of these primal branding elements just firing on all cylinders.
Wow.
They're doing, and it really kind of ruins it for you because you want to just enjoy a movie, or whether it's a celebrity on television or someone you follow on Instagram or a YouTube creator, whoever it might be.
Sure.
But now, like, you can't, at least I can't help but like reverse engineer everything they're doing. I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing right there. So we can run through those seven things real quickly if you'd like, but it first comes down to what he calls your creation story. Who are you? Where'd you come from? We need to have some backstory. So when you introduced me, you told people my backstory, dated a girl, want to introduce my friend across the country, right? Family, right? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got started on YouTube. That's the creation story. And then two, we need to know what we've been talking about here is their creed, but what do they believe? And is it like, IBM says think, and then Apple comes out and says think different, right? Like, this is like, this is what we believe we're all about. You're taking a stand for something. Three, what are the icons, the visual representations that we grow to associate with that brand? Number four, what are the rituals? Just the repeated interactions that we grow to love and expect. So like every, like PewDiePie has got the bro fist or the PewDiePie thing, right? Or the Dude Perfect's got the pound it noggin, see ya, like every video. Like, what are just those things that the people just grow to love? And if you don't do it, people are like, oh, what's wrong, Pewds? Like, well, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know? You got to have, going out order, sacred words. These are just like the inside language that, that your audience speaks.
Oh, wow.
So that when you say this thing, everyone knows what this thing means, but an outsider doesn't know what this means until they become an insider. So like, for example, he uses the example of Starbucks. Starbucks could have just called it a small, medium, and large.
Wow.
But I don't know what they call it. I'm not a star. It's like Venti, Grande, and
it's tall, Grande, Venti, and I'm not going to tell you the fourth one because
I'm not a part of that tribe. I don't speak that language.
Right.
But they change the language on purpose. When you go in there, you're like, I belong here. I know exactly what I'm going to order. I speak this language. And I go in there, I'm like, do you have a smoothie? You have that inside brand language that identifies, are you in or are you out? You have non-believers, just number six. That is like, you need the haters, actually. They play an integral role in solidifying and building your community. And then you have the leader, like, who is leading this charge? Who's the person that we're following who represents this primal code for us? So,
got to have a figurehead. You got to have someone to be able to lift up and get behind, right?
Yeah, and brands get really nervous about that usually, but we can talk through that too. But yeah, those are seven things. To answer your question real quickly, he goes into more detail in Primal Branding. But those are the types of things that you need to integrate into your content in order for people to start getting the signals that they need in order to fall in love with your brand and your content and really want to start following everything that you do.
That's amazing. And this doesn't just stop at video. This is across all mediums. And
exactly.
This is non-denominational, right? You're in the video space because there's such a rich tapestry of all of these different points where static ads or text ads can't carry the water completely. Video does. Video has a much richer canvas to be able to deliver those elements on, right?
Oh, yeah. And not just those elements, but the how you package all of those things inside of an engaging story that people actually want to watch. You know, so it's like you've got these elements over here that you're trying to integrate along with this story, three-act structure that you're also trying to follow in some sort of way, whether it's 60 seconds on TikTok or 10 minutes on YouTube or 2.5 hours in a movie theater. It's all the same principles, just repackaged and delivered in different ways. And I think that's part of the reason why people get frustrated when they're like, oh, this works great on television. Like, why is it not working on YouTube?
Yep.
Like, well, because that's a presentation. What people on YouTube want is a conversation. This is social media. It's a lean in experience. People are leaning in on their desktops and their phones and they're not multitasking. They're not distracted. But on television and movies, it's a lean back experience. They're usually doing other things.
And multi-screen environment nowadays. You may have three different devices along with the TV. So there's no longer that captive audience. But you're right, is that there's, again, the delivery mechanism is huge, but a company can't come to you and say, hey, we want to do this just like these guys. Because if there's an evolved or mature YouTube methodology and marketing plan, that took time to build and research and understand. And there's a lot of broken eggs, right, that you have to be able to make that omelet. Nobody can come to you and say, tell me how to get it be a success on YouTube, because you haven't found their audience yet or haven't gotten them into that recipe. And they have to have that patience to be able to navigate the pathway that you're talking about, right?
Yeah, there's some things that we can certainly learn by looking at what they would consider their competitors on YouTube in terms of, okay, how are they attracting the audience? How are the audience responding to it? What's performing well for them? Like, so I think it's smart to evaluate that and not just like start with a completely blank canvas. You mm-hmm. can start with some good principles based on what you see other people doing and then emulate those in your own way. Mm-hmm. Like not in, we're just going to copy it.
Right.
But like, this is what makes sense. This is what's on brand for us, or this is, we want to do this, but for this different audience or whatever. You can modify it and tweak it to work.
And we're in now we're in, I mean, if I and this is your space, but we've got 10 years into YouTube where there's been such a maturation. There's now well-hewn paths of seeing brands do it right and seeing brands do it wrong. So you can literally point out elements of how they've structured and matured their content over time. So it's good to be able to not only not emulate, but be able to understand there are structural differences. There are formats, or I should say recipes, right? That you start seeing these archetypes that are in there. Can you give us some examples of some short form and long forms that are really doing it well?
Oh, for on the brand side?
Yeah.
Of things? Not too many, unfortunately. I get this question a lot. Mm-hmm. There's brands that would be quote unquote successful, but your question is that they're doing it well.
Yeah. There you go.
So a lot of the times the brands will just dump a lot of money behind promotion and they'll make their boss happy because they got a million views. But when like 95% of that was paid, it's not really doing well, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it's because a lot of the bigger brands and I understand their concern. It's like, we can't just sit on the edge of our bedroom, like bed in our bedroom, and just talk about our life, mm-hmm. you know, and nor should they. That is, would be inappropriate, but they still do and must consider like the primal branding elements, the storytelling elements, and a lot of these other principles we've been talking about in terms of video strategy and even SEO, if you want to get into there. It's just like, you have to still consider these and follow the principles in order to work. The big one being that like, people need to make an emotional connection, a human connection with you. And it's very hard to make a human connection with a logo, right? So yes, it's risky to have a face. So have three faces, maybe mitigate the risk a little bit and just split up the social equity between three different personalities instead of one or something like that. Or even Disney has Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse, right? So maybe, I'm not saying that's the right approach for everyone, but there needs to be some sort of character that we connect to, mm-hmm. that then that connection is what makes us love the brand. It's Steve Jobs to Apple, it's Bill Gates to Microsoft. So it's possible to do it without it, but it is a whole lot harder to do that without that connection piece. Because ultimately the algorithm revolves around the connection. That's what they're trying to measure, is mm-hmm. how do people respond to this content? And that's how they decide how to surface it. So
all right, he went there. So I'm gonna deep dive with him. All right, so let's talk about the algorithm for a second.
Yeah, let's do it. I figure it's an SEO show, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. Have to get there. You know,
I want to make sure your audience gets some.
I was a stranger in a strange land over here, but when we get into SEO and metrics, let's deep dive into this, because we all understand the algorithm on this. We are suffering from the algorithm. on the Google side of things, but there's certainly an algorithm that's like you painted the picture initially, is Google, YouTube is going to move your content as soon as it understands your audience. It's going to move that content in front of that audience. How do you actually work the content in the space that the algorithm floats you up to the top? But what are the key factors of the algorithm currently inside of YouTube? Can you give us an insight there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Let's start with that, because I think if you understand what they're actually looking for, then mm-hmm. that helps us understand how to best craft our content so that it performs well with YouTube search and discovery systems. There's like three main things. There's a lot, but we'll kind of suffice it to say the three big ones are: one, they are looking to evaluate how much time do people spend watching this video. It's measured in, it's called watch time, which is just the total accumulated amount of time people spent watching this video. The more time people spend watching a video, the more valuable Google deems that video to be, sure. and thus the more likely it will be to be surfaced. Okay. Number two, They're looking for, okay, well, how does this video contribute to the viewer's overall viewing session on YouTube? So yeah, they spent some time watching it, but then they clicked the link in the description below the video and left and went to the website. Mm-hmm. And so if we surface this video, that people only stay on YouTube for like 2 minutes. Oh, wow. Versus we've got this other person's video that we could surface. We surface that, people stay on YouTube for another 30 minutes. So
wow.
If YouTube ad is to keep people on YouTube as long as possible, seeing as many ads as possible, yep, engaging with as much content as possible, then they're going to surface the one that's resulting in a 30-minute viewing session all day long over your video, even if you have more watch time, right? So it's not, and then there's the third thing, which is, okay, how does this video contribute in bringing people back to YouTube later, like tomorrow or next week, you know? So it's not just this viewing session now, but how satisfied are they with this content that gives them a good positive experience on this platform that makes them more likely to come back and re-engage again in the future, okay? So all right. Those are some pretty high level things.
Okay, but I got a question on the second one, as it relates to exiting YouTube. We understand that every platform wants to keep the audience in their platform, but let me ask you this. YouTube advertising, my goal is to be able to get them to my website to convert, right?
Yeah, advertising is a little different. That's the whole goal of that product, is to get people out. They separate that data from organic data.
Okay. But at the same time, knowing that this is a Google-backed environment here, wouldn't some conversion data from the website itself, if it's actually being tracked accurately, make its way back into some of the metric there? Is there any space in which the performance and the engagement on the user's website or the destination website filter back in on a brand play or a connection to that video property play? Is there anything in the back channels that are feeding some of the metrics there?
Not that I've seen or heard of even seen make a difference or suggested. No, it seems like your end of viewing session is not bad to do. And sometimes it makes good business sense to do so. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we should avoid at all costs, but it is something that we should avoid if we're trying to make a discoverable video. Because here's one of the other mistakes a lot of marketers make is they try to do too many things with one piece of content, with one asset. They're like, we want every video to get lots of views, mm-hmm, get lots of subscribers, rank number one, show up on homepages, be suggested, convert lots of new leads to their website, go big on Reddit, you know, be highly shareable. Like, you can't make, nowhere else in the marketing world do we have like one piece of content that's supposed to do 15 things, right? But we make that mistake on YouTube. Like on your website, you have one website, but the homepage is designed and crafted for a specific goal, which is different than your about page, right, which is different than your contact page, which is different than your sales page. It's all one website, but each page is being crafted to accomplish one specific goal. That's how we should be approaching our YouTube channels. One channel, this video is intended to go out and get people like who've never heard of us before. So we're spending extra time on our title, our thumbnail, our opening hooks, mm-hmm, and then good content, including some of our primal branding elements, good story, engages them. And then the only call to action there is not to subscribe, is not to comment, is not to go to our website. It's the only call to action is to increase the viewing session. So now that you know this, next thing you need to know is accompany this dish with that dessert. So click right here on this video, and then I'll see you guys in that next video.
And just lead them to the next video. Absolutely.
Don't say goodbye. No ending language. No, I hope this was helpful. No, tell me what you think. None of that. People just abandon your content immediately when, mm-hmm, they get those signals that the content's over. So you get them right. And so right into the next video. So that's when that video now becomes more discoverable and you start to grow your channel. You start to get more views and traction because you're making that content. Now there's another bucket of content called
sales content. By the way, audience, if you're listening right now, click here to actually listen to the entire news broadcast of Tim Schwoyer. Go right ahead, sir.
Increase the podcast viewing session. Yeah. So there's another bucket called sales, our team calls it sales content, which is where you brought people into your channel. Well, there's another bucket called community, which is, we can go through all this whole strategy.
Sure. Yeah.
Bring people in with discoverable content. The title, thumbnail, hook, you're crafting, even before you press record, you already know what they clicked on, the expectation that the title and thumbnail set in their brain, the tension that is there that they need to have resolved, which is why they click in the first place, and then the opening seconds of that video, how it continues from where the title and thumbnail left off, not just repeating it. People are like, Yeah. I know. That's why I clicked. And they'll leave your video. So picking up from the title thumbnail left off, increasing the tension and then delivering on it. And then wrapping up with like, get into this next video. We'll see you there.
Wow.
So that's a discoverable video. And then you have community videos, which is where the only goal here is to have the viewer start to engage with you in some way. So the first transaction is watch more. The second transaction you're asking for is starting to engage with our brand. These can be a little less produced. You're going to publish these. And the only people who are probably going to care about these videos is your existing audience, which is great because you're trying to grow the know, like, and trust factors with community content. So you're going to publish it a week from now. It's probably no longer getting any views. It went through your subscriber base. They were satisfied. And that's great. That video did its purpose. The third, the only call to action there is like engagement, comment, tell me, let's like interact in some way. The third bucket is the sales video. And that is where it's not a commercial. It's still delivering on the value that your brand promises to deliver in every single video. But it ends with a pitch to click the link below, sign up, download, buy, register, whatever, get off of YouTube. And by doing that, that video will probably not perform very well long-term if it actually converts well.
Right.
But that's okay because our discoverable videos are still bringing people in to our channel. And so what happens is we're basically creating a customer journey on our YouTube channel with video. We have the discoverable videos, bring people in, introduce them to our brand. Then the community videos, build that know, like, and trust factors with them. And then we capitalize on that with a sale after they get to that point with that video.
Wow.
And so it's just like a good old fashioned email. Like, you have the lead magnet, it gets them to a nurturing campaign, which ends up in a sale, right? So we're doing that same process on YouTube, because what most people try to do, they want the video ranked number one. We want it to get lots of traffic and then convert to a sale. But most people don't buy after a very first initial interaction with you.
Nope.
You're going to convert way higher in that sales video anyway. So you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot multiple times trying to get the sale on the discoverable.
Now you're screwing up your discoverable flotation devices right there, right?
Yeah, you're just poking holes through it.
Oh my gosh. Did you catch all that, Jacob? My gosh, that was a gauntlet.
I'm glad we're recording this.
Yeah, sorry I went a little fast.
No,
there.
You're good,
I get a little worked up sometimes too, because you haven't even gotten me on the metadata subject yet.
That's awesome. And what you're talking about, the buyer's journey, everything. This is like micro Maslow hierarchy of pain, consideration, and giving safety at the video, individual video side, as well as the structure that is the latticing of how many discoverables do we have, how many like consideration videos do we have, how many transactional videos do you have. You have to have the entire bandolier, and if you're doing it well enough, you have that engine that keeps on moving, and it's serving different consumers at their different spaces of understanding your brand, right?
Yeah. Here's what happens when you do it this way. We worked with one guy, a client. He had, I think around the time he had around 80,000 subscribers, and he had been doing one video every weekday. So 5 videos a week, Monday through Friday, posting a new video. And it was all good, valuable content. And then every video would end with a pitch for his course. Now go buy my course. And so he was doing this for about a year and a half and just frustrated that he wasn't getting traction. He's like, Tim, my YouTube channel's not growing. I'm just kind of plateaued and stuck. I'm making around $20,000 a month in course sales, but I know there's a lot more opportunity here. And everything, like, no matter what I tried, nothing's moving. So we told him, all right, well, let's do 2 discoverable videos a month. A week, 2 community videos a week, and every Friday let's do a sales video. And he's like, but Tim, you're telling me that I'm going to go from selling 5 times a week to once a week, and I'm supposed to make more money? And we were like, yes, do that.
Wow.
And so he's like, okay, I'm trusting you on this thing. So he did it the very next month of doing that, that platform. His channel grew by 500%. He 5x'd his growth in 1 month. And his revenue went from $20,000 to $100,000 the next month, also 5x'd. Because what was happening was he was basically just selling to the same audience over and over again.
Absolutely.
There's a little bit of turnover, a couple people unsubscribing, a couple new people subscribing who are like them buying. But what we need to do is, like, if you really want more transactions, you need a bigger front door. You need to get more people in, and thus more people then at the end of the funnel. And so he started doing that. He 5X both his revenue and his channel growth at the same time. And that's like the power of, like, I am picking one specific goal for this video, and I'm just going to craft this video, do this one thing very well, and not try to mix and match it with 15 other goals at the same time.
Oh my gosh. It is a funnel, and you got to visualize it that way. All these different videos have a place to play in the conversation you're having with the customer. And he had a tone deaf set of audience. I mean, they were still engaging, but you didn't have that have a lead gen.
The people who are going to buy already bought, and the rest were like, I'm not interested. And so he just wasn't selling to as many new people. He thought it was selling to 80,000 people. But I was like, no, you're only getting like 2,000 new people in a month, but you're also losing about 2,000 people a month. So you actually need to increase this. So,
yeah. All right. I got to swing the door open for metadata. All right. This is the last stop on our voyage here. We really appreciate the knowledge done. So let's talk about metadata and optimization inside of YouTube. But you lead us, please. Let us understand here.
So here's what happens. All right. Top level creators don't do this. This is very much like going back to your very first question, like what common mistakes do people make? And one of them being is they think their videos will perform based on keywords, based on tags, based on caption files, based on all that robot stuff.
Right.
And the truth is YouTube doesn't care about that stuff. And because
you're breaking my heart, man, you're breaking my heart.
Well, the people like it. People like it because, especially creators, they feel like, oh, this is something I can control.
Right.
That's going to make my videos perform better. If it didn't perform better, okay, it's the algorithm's fault. I just need to use better keywords next time. But there's already millions of people using every keyword out there. You know, like, it's already so saturated that just because you find a keyword with low competition and high volume, there's still tens of thousands of other people doing that. And furthermore, this is the real reason why YouTube doesn't places very little stock. Now, search might be a little different. We can talk about that if you like. But even then, it's still not much different. It's people lie all the time in their metadata. They use misleading data because they think that if I, like, my video is not really about this thing, but this keyword has less competition, higher volume, so I'm going to use that one instead. And YouTube's learned that we can't rely on the data that people give us because they're putting PewDiePie in their tags, hoping now that their video will rank next to PewDiePie, even though this video has nothing to do with PewDiePie.
Got it.
And it's back in 2012, they switched to watch time, which the big picture of that as a primary ranking factor, the big picture of that is that they are now ranking videos based on viewer signals, which means that in order for your video to perform well on YouTube, it really comes down to how your audience reacts to the video. The signals people pick up the YouTube systems pick up about your video from actual viewers, whether they click or they don't click, do they stay around, what happens after this, that's what they're looking at. And so what it really comes down to is you should optimize your metadata 100% for people, for humans, not for robots.
Got it.
Because the robots are just trying to measure how the people react. So you could have a perfectly legitimate, well-done video, and the title is maybe, don't do this. Is the title. No keywords whatsoever. But maybe the thumbnail is a picture of someone jumping off the roof off of a trampoline into a swimming pool or something. And so that teases a story where you're like, oh, I want to see what happens next. YouTube starts figuring out who is interested in that story and starts surfacing that content to that person, even though there's no metadata involved. Because the other truth is the YouTube's AI is so good now. Like, you can be uploading a video, and if it contains copyrighted material, it will be blocked even before it's finished uploading.
Amazing.
So YouTube is literally scanning that content, and they know their AI, and I can show you all this. We had to make your content perform at time, but they can show you exactly how many people are in the shot, who's speaking at what time, what brand of shoes that person is wearing. If they're outside, they can map it to, like, maybe even geotag. This is where this shot took place. They can tell that these are like make your content perform apes, and those are monkeys in the shot. Wow. They're scanning. They even are getting to the point, it's in early alpha, that they are starting to make judgments on someone's personality and values based on fashion.
the clothes that they're wearing.
Right. So that's not out there yet, but that's the level at which YouTube does not need your metadata. So optimize it 100% for people, the story, the content, the titles, the thumbnails, and just focus on serving people really well. And all the technical stuff,
right,
their YouTube, like the people shouldn't, in fact, this is anything YouTube says that anything that the creator has to do that the user doesn't care about is classified as a bug. So anything that the user doesn't care about that you had to do in order to make your content perform is classified as a bug.
Could be an annoyance and a demerit or a detractor from. I mean, this is, it makes all the sense in the world, is that it's not text spin. It's nothing. It's got to be performance. It has to be engagement. Yeah. It has to be, and YouTube understands what those factors are that show that the user shows interest in. So there's no room for BS marketing. There's no room for spin or manipulation.
Difficult. Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's really great. The hard part about it is now it forces you, if your video is not performing well, it forces you to have to admit that for some reason, my content still just isn't good enough yet. Mm-hmm. And you got to be really self-aware in order to make that admission. It's way easier to be like, YouTube's algorithm's holding me back. And that's when we usually like want to come and picture and be like, no, you can do this better. Let's just help you optimize it for people on this platform. And that will help your videos perform, whoever you're trying to reach.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Even with well-performing videos, you can always give them an additional factor of improvement just by having the user engagement side of things well vetted out. And that goes to the companies and the marketing firms that are doing this. Do they understand those factors enough to be able to work them into their video content? Or are they lucking into this space just because of the manner or just because of the content, the genre itself? So there's you find a lot of businesses that are doing well. They stumbled into engagement or stumbled into these metrics, but they're not actually executing it with a level of discipline.
Right. Yeah. And that becomes a problem. Usually what happens there is some of these channels will start to grow. So I got the momentum and people are like, oh, I got it. The YouTube guys are favoring me and I'm winning and blah, blah, blah. And then it takes a turn. And now it's no longer growing. It plateaus or it just tanks or something.
Right.
And then people are like, what happened? I'm doing everything the same I used to do, but now my channel's not growing. The problem is you didn't really know what was causing your channel to grow in the first place. You made an assumption that this was the thing that was doing it. For example, a very common scenario is people are like, oh yeah, I'm doing great. My channel's growing and getting like, let's just say 100 new subscribers per day. Mm-hmm. And what they think is like the videos I'm doing are helping my channel grow. But the truth is, the reality is, very commonly is that you really have like one video on your channel that's generating 300 subscribers per day, and the rest of your entire library is costing you 200,000 or 200 subscribers per day.
Gosh.
So you feel like you're growing at 100 subscribers per day, but that's only because you have one video, and then that one video starts to tank and they're like, what's going on? Like, I didn't change anything. You're like, that's right. Because you didn't really know why you were growing in the first place and you made these assumptions. So again, that's where people like us come in and help people.
So do you recommend jettisoning some of the older videos that a campaign or a brand has?
Not necessarily, mostly because YouTube systems, if it's not performing well, if people aren't resonating with it, they just won't surface it anymore.
Got it.
So, and every once in a while, an older video will just like get picked up by YouTube systems. And now it fits perfectly into this viewing session, but that viewing session didn't exist till someone over there uploaded that video. And now your video is the perfect next video to watch. But prior to that other person's video being uploaded, it didn't really fit well for the user.
Got it. So even if it's not behaving well, keep it in the paddock because it could very well take off based on new content that's related.
unless you just feel like this is hurt, like this is not representative of my brand. Like this would hurt my brand and what people think about me now if they saw this. So that would be a reason. But even then, I wouldn't remove it. I would just make it unlisted so it doesn't show up publicly on YouTube. But still, anyone who's got a notification about it or it's been shared or embedded somewhere, it'll still work for those people.
Very good. Very good. I'm going to have to ask for a chapter two on this. There's so much that you're unpacking, and I really want to get you back and go into a whole nother realm of not only tips and techniques, but also understanding the attraction factor, the hooks themselves. That's an entire conversation just on video hooks, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially how they connect with title, thumbnail, and then hook. So it's a very, most creators figure that out before they even press record.
I'm going to have to buy him dinner or something like this. We got to get him back on the show. There's so much here that we want to be able to deliver to our audience. So, take a breath. Tim, there's no way to ask you one pro tip. What would you give to our audience one pro tip on video? But I'm going to ask it anyway.
I mean, I think I would just kind of come back and say, just focus on creating content that serves people well. Now, how you do that is another story, but in terms of execution and things, but when that's like the heart of it, that heart goes really far and people can pick up on that.
So just have that litmus test before you really start a video. Is this good for my audience? Is this does it help them in their life? Does this something that is useful for them? If it doesn't pass that particular checklist, then go back to number one and make sure that your content is valuable. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just bring it back to like, we're serving people here. We're not trying to bow to an algorithm or anything. We're like, what is best for people? How do I craft this content so it would serve them best? That's what it comes down to.
Excellent. All right. I'm going to have you back on the show here soon. Hopefully, we can get you back in and I'll promise that we won't move the puck that often. For everybody who's listening at home, I had a devil of a time. Tim was there the entire time, but I constantly was out of pocket during these shows. So we thank you for coming back, and we certainly appreciate everything that you provide. Couple last questions. What bugs you about your industry right now?
I think it's probably the fact that people focus so heavily on the technical side of things. And there is a technical side. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but it's like, we like to focus on like the 80-20 rule. If you do 80% of this or 20% of this, you get 80 results, 80% result. And so like, but so many people spend the time on like the 2%, like the thing that moves the needle, like a very little, and it takes like 90% of their time. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I mean, the thing that bugged me, I think, is just people getting misleading ideas about like, hey, the way I win on YouTube is by using keywords and tags and optimization. And then they just totally miss like the human elements of like that actually gets people to care and creates connection. And the thing that gets people that builds trust and authority and credibility and those signals that the viewer really needs. And the way you do that very intentionally is actually what makes a bigger difference.
So. Very good. They can't blame the algorithm. They've got to understand it. And I'm sure you've heard that so many times that YouTube's holding them back. And
oh my gosh.
It's kind of like the scales fall from the eyes.
I get that a lot. And then you get the end of the consultation, like a one-on-one, 1 hour session with them. And they're like, oh, wow. I thought it was the algorithm, but you showed me like, no, it's actually me. I'm like, yeah, that happens to all of us. So nothing personal. The algorithm doesn't know who you are and they don't care. They're not holding you back.
They want to actually promote you. I mean, honestly, exactly. They want to get you to their customers. And maybe you're just not moving the right content. All right. Well, conversely, what excites you about your industry right now?
What excites me is that there are more people going that direction, especially as more and more people are seeing that the older stuff isn't working anymore, the older strategies, and that it's an easier pill for people to swallow now than it was even this time last year, especially 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful because it means more people will find success on the platform and ultimately more people will be reached and more lives will be changed with the messages that all these people are spreading. So that's what excites me the most is that.
Very good. Very good. We want to promote something for you. So lay it on us. Where can we steer our audience to go check out what you can do for them?
Yeah. If anyone's like interested in just like a step-by-step process of how do I just start making a subscribable YouTube channel, mm-hmm. we have a process we call 30 days to better YouTube channel. And every day for 30 days is in our course that we give you a teaching, a video you're going to watch, some action steps you can do right then and there on your channel based on the teaching, and then links to further resources. Just that by the end of 30 days, your channel is optimized to convert people, to get those first-time viewers into subscribers. Because a lot of people just jump straight to the discoverability thing, mm-hmm. and they ignore the fact that there's this thing called a bounce rate that you can do all these things to try to rank number one, but you won't stay number one if you have a high bounce rate, and people just don't end up engaging with your content and don't end up subscribing. Like, so we want to make sure we first set up our home base, our channel, be as highly subscribable as possible,
right.
and then we dive into discoverability and things. So that process, 30 Days to Better YouTube Channel, is exactly step-by-step, how do you do that? How do you craft your content to engage viewers? How do you pitch those things? It talks more about the discoverable, the community, the sales categories, talks about how the algorithm works, those three things in more detail and all that. So it's at videocreators.com/30days is where you can find it and dive in right now.
Wow. No, that's a fantastic tool set. My gosh, for 30 days and have that amount of content, well worth it. Make sure that you go there and we'll certainly have it in the show notes. Any final thoughts for our audience today?
No, thank you guys for having me, and the rest of you guys, go out, reach more people, change their lives with the businesses that you're growing, and serve them.
Best way to say it. All right. So check out the trending news that we had with Tim on the other podcast. We'll have this linked between them, but don't click off of that video over to our website. We're actually going to take all the links off of our descriptions from here on out. We want to be able to get that engagement higher. Make sure that you do click here, or wherever here is, on this next video to check out Tim's take on the news. And we appreciate everybody actually joining us, and what an incredible amount of content and just great tips regarding video marketing inside of YouTube. You certainly want to follow Tim. Go over and follow him on Twitter at Tim Schmoyer, and Facebook Video Creators, and Instagram Video Creators as well. So track him down. He's giving so much good information on a regular basis. Don't forget to subscribe to Edge of the Web on YouTube, and if you're really feeling up to it, we'd certainly appreciate any reviews it can provide us on iTunes, on our podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Site Strategics and Hrefs. Want to check out all the videos over at our YouTube channel, and go over to edgeofthewebradio.com to sign up for the newsletter so we can bring this information to your inbox on a regular basis. Next show, we're going to be talking to Jerome Korthoff of Salesforce, so check that out. We're going to have a great time there. From all of us over at Edge, be safe, be well, and do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.